Shanti. So today's topic is from fear to love. And it's been said that there are only two prime emotions, two like base emotions. One is fear, the other is love. So something to think about. We're either coming from fear or coming from love. And I would say that this journey of spirituality is to move from fear to love. And in fact, just a bit of background to this topic. I was asked to give a talk in Hong Kong at the Philosophy Cafe. And I suggested the topic, the difference between superstition, religion, and spirituality. And as I was thinking about this topic, actually it took me from this journey, superstition being fear, through to spirituality being love. So just a little background to that. And I would say that the most significant transformation from fear to love comes from the experience of the love from Baba. I would say, and I'd like you to think about it, that it really is the only unconditional love, the only source of unconditional love. And unless we've experienced that unconditional love, that we can't really love ourselves. So I've put this question to many people, whether they can really love without experiencing God's love, which is an interesting question, especially in Asia, where a lot of people don't have any concept of love, of God, don't have any concept of God. So, you know, I put this question to them, and I think a lot of them are still thinking about it and observing and seeing whether it really is possible to love without experiencing God's unconditional love. So you can do this little research in your communities. But so far, I haven't found anyone disagreeing with that on the basis of experience. Maybe intellectually they might think something else, but when they really look at themselves or people they know, it's something to, I think, fully be confirmed. But so far, the feedback is that, yes, that's valid, that without the unconditional love of God, we can't really move into love. But maybe to start from fear. If we thought about all the different fears that we have, the list is probably endless. From spiders to cockroaches to, I don't know, all kinds of things, but of course to big things like destruction as well. But if we brought it down to one main fear, it probably is fear of death. And in fact, Kali Yuga means the age of death. So people are living in fear. It's a fear-based society. And most people, like I said, two prime emotions, fear and love. Look around, most people are operating from fear. So we have to check ourselves. Where am I coming from? Fear or love? So death is probably the main one. Then another one is, I think a lot of our fears can come under these four categories. Death, loss, fear of pain or change, like old age, and of the unknown. In fact, it was interesting in Hong Kong, we did a survey once to see what topics we should take up. And of all the topics we gave, the two that were right up here and the rest were like way down, the first was how to improve relationships, And the second was fear of ghosts. Like, they were right up here. So that's a bit of the unknown. A lot of people have that fear, you know, because of the unknown. So I feel that there are some universal laws or principles that we can use. And I see that there's only really four universal laws. And again, I'd like to put that out to you because I'm looking for more, but I've only found four. And that I find very interesting because, you know, there's so much wisdom and knowledge and things to change, but to think that it can be brought down to four basic universal laws or principles. And what would be the criteria for calling it a law or a universal principle is that it can't be broken. It's a truth. It's eternal. And in fact, it's been said that you can't actually break universal laws. You know, we say, oh, they break the law. You can't break these laws. But if you go against these laws, you break yourself. You will suffer. The law doesn't suffer no matter what you do, but you suffer if we don't live by these universal laws. So the first one, which I feel is very relevant to overcoming fear of death, is eternity. That nothing can be created or destroyed. And in fact, so many people who do the course, it's one of the most powerful insights that people can have, that they are eternal, that they don't die. So to overcome that fear of death is to realize eternity. Like Baba was saying today, we need the power of churning to go into all these points of knowledge so that they really give us power and they work for us at a time of need. So eternity is something to experience, experiment with, to fully kind of take on as a truth. Souls, matter, and God, all eternal. And the second, the fear of loss, is the principle, I don't know what better word to use, but maybe detachment, that we can't possess anyone or anything. It's a law. We can never possess anyone. We can never possess anything. And in fact, in Buddhism, they say that the cause of all suffering is grasping, holding on, or trying to. Because you can't. Even this. I hope it stays with me as long as I have the rest of my body, but who knows? You know, we can't own anything. We can't possess anything. Everything's just given to us in trust. It's ours to use while it's there. But we can't possess anyone or anything. And if we realize this, then there can't really be a fear of loss because we never owned it in the first place. So to live with that consciousness, like Baba says, of being a trustee. So a lot of fear is removed. A lot of the pain of I and my, as Baba's been saying in the Muli, comes from, you know, forgetting that I can't possess anyone or anything. And the third, the fear of change or pain, old age. You know, we kind of get older and we lose our faculties, we lose our looks, and, you know, the body gets worn out, sick, illnesses. So this can be covered, I think, from the law of entropy, that everything moves from order to chaos, that, you know, everything has to degenerate. You know, our bodies are degenerating, everything is going from order to chaos, from new to old. So it's a fact. And again, if we just accept pain rather than resist it, because It's going to be there. It's going to be there somewhere or another, whether it's emotional or physical or whatever. We can't avoid it. It's part of life. And especially it's a law of entropy. So acceptance. And the fourth one, the fear of the unknown. And I would say that one law that helps us to face the unknown, because there is unknown, we don't really know what's going to happen in our future, but the law of karma, or if you want to put it in a more technical term, the law of causation to every, you know, for every result, there's been some cause. So we could be afraid of pain and suffering and all the things that could happen, but the only guarantee really that Baba teaches us is to do good action, because we can more or less guarantee our future by our present, by performing right action. And actually we can observe this in our day-to-day life. You know, if we just do right action, in fact my experience is this, if I do right action, then the results always come out in the right way. And, you know, I'd rather not give my personal experiences, but I'm thinking what other examples to give. But just one little one perhaps to share with you. I was just in Australia in one of the retreat centres for the past few years. And when I went back to Australia from Hong Kong, I was given this tiny little old car that was about 18 years old. And kind of just about managed to get around. And after a little while, I was offered another car by the Yagya, because in this retreat place, there's no other way to get around. And I was offered another car, a good car. But I knew that the other retreat center needed a truck. So I said, well, you know, this little car's okay, so maybe, you know, it's better to get to sell that car you have and get a truck. And I just worked also on this experience I have in the faith, that if we just do what we think is the right thing, then when I need what I need, it'll come at the right time. So I had that kind of thought, that when I really need it, it will come. Whereas one of the aspects of fear is also to always be in that what we call scarcity mentality, that we always think, well, I better take it now. I don't really need it, but I might need it in another 6 months or 1 year. So when something's offered, just take it, you know. And people have started to hoard, you know, to keep things because of this, because they're afraid of the future. And this is one wonderful thing about our yagya, that I don't think you'll find anything in the bank anywhere in the yagya. Everything's being used and used. You know, recently we sold the apartment we had in Hong Kong. So Daddy said, we looked for another apartment and it wasn't really working out. So Daddy said, okay, give us the money. Because she doesn't like to see any money sitting in banks. Which I think is a very good thing to realize, because there's actually needs to be a flow, you know, and that's kind of like working in this abundant mentality. When we need it, it will come. But for now, just let it keep moving, whatever it is, whether it's, you know, machinery that you're not using or money that you're not using, but keep the flow going. So what happened is this little car got, you know, really very old, to the point that you couldn't really go around corners or up hills or drive in the rain. So I had the thought, you know, I think we really do need a car for the retreat center. You know, now it's the time that we need a car. So I just had this thought, you know, that we need to get a car for the retreat center. And the next day, really literally the next day, this brother said, oh, I don't need this truck that I have. do you want to sell it and get a car? So it was just like what I believed in, very, very clearly, specifically and definitely came to pass. And why it made me so happy is because it just reconfirmed the belief. You know, it's nice to have our beliefs reconfirmed because sometimes they're very nice ideas, very nice ideals. But when they get reconfirmed, it's like they increase our faith. And just on that, I remember Baba saying also that, you know, we have to make effort to have faith. You know, normally in the world, people think you either have faith or you don't. But I think with this, on this path of knowledge, we can make efforts, we can try, we can apply these principles and see if they work. And if they work, it increases our faith. So it's a developing and deepening experience. So, you know, there is that belief that if we do the right thing, then there will be the right outcome. So when it comes to the fear of the unknown, if we just keep doing the right thing, then the unknown has to kind of work out to some extent okay. And of course the rest of the unknown is the rest of the knowledge we get. I mean, Baba just gives us so much understanding, even like I was saying, this unknown, what people fear, the fear of ghosts as the unknown, but Baba makes even that very clear for us. So I don't think there's much left that we need to know. And if there is, it's probably there in our body of knowledge that we just have to go more deeply into or ask and we'll get answers to. And I would say, you know, connected with that, that the only fear that's probably legitimate, and, you know, I think there is such a thing as healthy fear. You know, we have to have a kind of a rational kind of fear of things to know when something is safe and when something's not safe. But I would say the main or the only healthy fear we need to have is a fear of wrong actions. You know, I don't know if fear is the right word, but definitely a very, very cautionary attitude because, like, you know, we're told that it's better to be trikaldashi, to see the past, present and future before doing anything, because once we've done it, we have to experience the consequences. So it's much better to really be trikaldashi and to see the future of our actions before we perform them, because once we've done the action, it can be a very big story following that. And of course they talk about in psychology the two things, flight and fight, that when there's fear, people either run, that's flight, or they stand and fight. But one other method that we're shown in this beautiful body of knowledge is transcendence. So not to run, not to fight, but to change the consciousness and lift the consciousness. So just to share a few experiences of people who've been in really very fearsome situations and they applied transcendence. And Baba says for that, that what we need is a viceless wireless. We need to have this connection with Baba so that we get a touching what to do in that very moment. And there was a sister who is now living here in Mount Abu. I don't know if she wants her name mentioned, but she was in Colombia and she was getting into the car going to class in the morning, and somebody came up to the car and grabbed her and started to tie her feet and her mouth and arms, and she thought, this is a kidnap. So she was going to be kidnapped. So what she did, it came to her. I mean, these things just come when you need them. She created the consciousness of being Kali. Do you know Kali, that goddess? She's fearsome. She's black and got skulls around her neck, and she's crushing a devil under her foot, and she has her tongue hanging out with very big eyes, and she just created this in her mind. She didn't make any faces, but she just created this consciousness of being Kali. And she said as soon as she started to do that, she could feel that the kidnapper was getting nervous. And he wasn't kind of doing this action with confidence, you know, so she could feel he wasn't doing it properly. And then he had to apparently find some keys in her car to use another getaway car. So another man came over and they were very anxious and upset because they couldn't find the keys to the getaway car. So ultimately, they had to abandon her. They had to leave her. But she didn't know if they're going to come back or, you know, what was going to happen next. She just knew that they couldn't find the keys and they're gone for now. But because he hadn't tied her properly, she was able to get out of these, you know, bondages and go inside and ring the police. And she actually freed herself of that situation. So all she did is transcend to a higher consciousness, not fight and not flee, which she couldn't do anyway. And then there was another experience of another sister in France, and she was walking in this back street and she heard somebody running behind her, and she had the feeling, he's coming for me. It was in the evening in France, still light, about 8 o'clock, and she was only about 17 years old at the time, and she just got this thought to turn round and face him, you know? So not to flee, not to fight, but just face him. And when she turned around, by the time she turned around, he was right here, you know, like right here in her face. And just him and herself, no one around. And he started to try and grab her handbag, and she just held on to it. And she just had this thought, he can't do it, he won't do anything to me. You know, she just had this thought that he can't do anything to me. And he started to grab her skirt and, you know. But then she was just having this kind of fearless stage. And he started to look at her like a crazy person. Like his eyes went big and he just dropped everything and looked at her and ran away. So she doesn't know, you know. She thinks maybe he saw some vision of a devil or maybe Kali, who knows, but he ran away. He went to the other side of the street and he stopped and looked back at her with this frightened look and went away. Just went away. And then the third experience is of this sister who was walking, I don't know if it was Sri Lanka or Malaysia, Didi was telling us the story, but she was going to class and somebody, there was this group of men, and she could feel that they had bad intention, but she just walked through remembering Baba. The woman who was walking behind her got caught and murdered. They asked her to come and be a witness at the, you know, because they knew that she was in the area. I think she reported it when she went to the other side. And they asked her, she identified these people, and they asked her, do you want to ask these people something? And she said, yes, I would like to ask something. She said, why didn't you murder me? And they said, we didn't see you. Were you there? We didn't see you. They didn't actually see her. Can you imagine? So flight and fight, I think, are very risky things to do. They don't usually work. But this transcendence, and I'm sure if you've all got your own stories of this, I could tell 20 stories of this kind of thing. But I think these things are very relevant because today there's so many things going on, you know, in every place. And if we can just connect with Baba and just know what to do at that moment, you know, maybe there's no standard for this kind of thing. And Baba calls this being the kittens kept in the furnace. You know, all kinds of things will be happening, but you'll be safe in the furnace. So we need to keep this viceless wireless to be safe. And Baba also gave a muli years ago about the four fires of destruction. Do you remember? The fires of destruction. And I was here for that muli, and I remember the atmosphere was so scary. Baba was really like, you know, describing these fires, and he said that, you know, there'll be these different fears, and one fear will be that the vices at that time will be in full force. So a fear of the vices, we have to go beyond the fear of the vices. And he called these fears, four fears, the four fires that we could get consumed by during destruction if we're not transcendent. The fire of the vices. Another one he mentioned in particular, it's one of the vices, but he gave it its own fire, attachment. And I think we can understand why. Even though it's one of the vices, at that time of destruction, it's going to be a big one. And the fire of destruction, just seeing, you know, what's going on all around us. And the fear of wandering spirits, because there'll be a lot of bodiless souls. I think that was the fourth one at that time. And Baba created such an atmosphere that we're all like kind of a bit shaking inside, that he taught, you know, he spoke about these fires as if like this is, he really described the scene at the end, what will be happening, and we'll be surrounded by these fires. And then he said, but you'll all be dancing, knowing that the new world will come with ankle bells on your feet, won't you? And I remembered we all kind of had this nervous laugh, because it was like, well, I hope so, you know, because what Baba was saying in describing those fires is that fire catches fire. You know, if there's fire and there's another fire, it very quickly connects and then you get engulfed. So Baba says, if you get caught by any one of these four fires, any one, the other three will also consume you. Because once your consciousness, you can imagine, once your consciousness has gone down, then, you know, we've kind of lost it. So we need to be in that awareness at that time that this destruction is just bringing the golden age, and just to be very beyond all the things that are going on. And I think it's a very good question to ask ourselves, especially after the latest Borg message, or the Borg message Baba sent about these, you know, these final times. And he was saying that the things that are going to happen in the future is even beyond our imagination. And when I heard that, I thought, well, tsunamis, you know, hurricanes, all of these things, they're terrible, but they're not beyond our imagination. We know about these things, and we knew, actually, that they're going to happen. So to be in such a state of mind where, like Baba said, ever ready for anything beyond even our imagination. So we have to be in such a transcendent state to be able to face what's coming in the near future. And Baba talks about the state of mind at that time as being one who has a loving intellect, that we need to be in that state of love for Baba. He talks about kind of a separated intellect, or a divorced intellect from Baba, and a loving intellect. And often we hear this phrase in the muli, it's a very strange one, where Baba says, death to the prey and victory to the hunter. It's a very kind of, you know, often new people get confused by that, and they say, what does that mean? Because it sounds quite but it, to me, it means that if I've got this loving intellect, then I'm not a prey at that time. I'm not a victim. You know, I'm part of the volunteer army bringing the new world. So you can be either a victim or a volunteer, and better to be a volunteer. So Baba talks about having that loving intellect at the time of destruction. And then to go into maybe from fear, and you know, we can have some questions if you have any at the end, but from fear into love. And it's a very interesting question to ask, can we actually operate in this world in a state of full love? I ask that because there's a brother you all know about, Dr. Roger Cole, and he had a really cathartic, a really transformational experience at the beginning of his spiritual journey. And because of an experience that he had, he was in a state of unconditional love for 10 days as a doctor, as an oncologist. And he actually went from this workshop that he'd done, he went back to work and he didn't get along with the registrar at the hospital, his boss. But he was in this state of unconditional love. And he went back to work into the hospital and he said to his boss, "I love you." Can you imagine? Can you imagine this doctor going up to his boss and saying, "I love you"? So his boss, the registrar at the hospital, put him under psychiatric supervision for 12 months. And actually Roger said he needed it, because he said, "I didn't know how to function in this state of love. I was like, you know, just in love." And it was, you know, and I've had another brother I remember in Hong Kong. He used to be very tough. He used to be put in all those jobs with really tough people, like on the wharfs, where all the triads, the kind of mafia kind of work, he used to be sent into those situations. And he was very tough. He called me one time after he did the course and he said, "I don't know what to do. I usually just hit this guy, and what am I supposed to do now as a Rajyogi?" But then the next time he called me, he said, "I don't know what to do. I'm just loving everything. I can't function. I love my shoes. You know, I love everything." And it's kind of really a question whether we can function in this world in this state of unconditional love. But just to, you know, explore a little bit of what is love, because it's one of the most misunderstood things in the world. In fact, one time I heard somebody say, you know, at least in English, I don't know in Spanish or other languages, but most of the songs that we hear, like if the radio's on, you'll listen to a song, they're all love songs, but all miserable, you know? They're usually really miserable about broken hearts and pain and sorrow, or they're promises. "I will love you forever. I can't live without you," you know? And we know that kind of thing also doesn't really last beyond the first few years. But somebody said we should sing these songs to ourselves. "I can't live without you. I will love you forever." And I think it's a very good way to twist them around, to sing them to ourselves and not to anyone else. In fact, nowadays, in psychology, they have this term codependency, where really people can't live without the other, you know? Whereas Baba teaches us to be independent, but not just independent, also interdependent. Because just to be independent is a bit dry, but we need to become independent first before we can become interdependent. In other words, we need to be whole, so that we can come into relationships whole. And that's why in things like Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they say it's better if we have an addiction not to be in a relationship, because it's hard to work on yourself, you know, when there is a dependency. Of course, you know, many of us come to Baba and we're already in a relationship, and that's a different thing, but to really, you know, really be as much on my own as I can just to sort myself out, because we've all got addictions in a way, you know, maybe not to drugs and alcohol, but to a lot of other things. So love, you know, is something we need to explore and understand. And I remember in Vietnam doing a workshop on this with some women in a drug rehab center. And I did this whole thing on what is love and what isn't love. And at the end, they said to me, everything you said is love, we feel is not love. And whatever you said is not love, we feel is love. We're really confused. So they asked me to come back again and explore it, because somewhere I guess they felt there was something in it, because they didn't completely dismiss it. But it was, you know, what the world thinks is love is not often love. Like just this one point of being unconditional. You know, people say, I love you, but they don't list out all the conditions. Actually, behind that sentence is usually lots of ifs. If you don't change, if you do what I want, if. But they don't say it, you know. But if you really question them, you know, you would find that it's very conditional. So love is only really love if it's unconditional. If there's conditions in love, then is it love at all? And love is inclusive. Often love happens when we don't feel love. You know, like if I want to go for a walk with someone and I ask someone to go with me who I like very much, is that love? Who's it for? You know, does it help me to grow? And the definition for myself that I find most suits my kind of working on this growing in love is a definition that says that love is to extend myself for my own growth or for another person's growth. And often when we keep, you know, little circles of friends, we don't grow because we keep kind of comfortable in that circle. We don't mix with other people that are a bit difficult or that we don't particularly like. So I don't grow in that way. But if I ask somebody or just, you know, the first person that I see, or if I ask someone to go with me that I feel a little bit not so comfortable with, I'm extending myself, I'm growing, I'm including. So very often love happens when there's not a feeling of love, when I really am extending myself. And why I like this definition of love is because it works. If I extend myself, you grow. And if I extend myself for your growth, I grow. So it's very mutual, you know, it's not one or the other. Again, it's inclusive. But very often we have these little boundaries, you know, we only include people. We have this like clique, you know, it means a little group that we mix with and anyone else is kind of an outsider. But if we do this, it's very exclusive. And I remember in Hong Kong they used to have this slogan, the Friends of the Earth, an environmental group, used to have this slogan, there's no such place as away. You know, when you throw something away, where's away? Is there any such place as away? No such place. It's somewhere still. And I think in the same way, when we push someone away because we don't feel comfortable with them, where's away? They still exist. They still need to be loved, accepted, and included. So where's a way? And in fact, I've added further damage to someone who probably is already a bit damaged. That's why they are difficult. So if we have this attitude of pushing someone away, we should also think about it. Where do they go? Who will include them? And if not me, then who? I've got some little. So love is inclusive. Another definition I've come across is that love is recognition. And if we start recognizing things like, you know, even this stool, or, you know, you can look at things and not appreciate them, but to look with love, to just, you know, like we've come in the hall now, there's been a few days, these decorations have been up. Do we still appreciate them? Must have taken a lot of work to put up these decorations. And if we look at them and appreciate them, we feel a sense of love. But if we just don't notice them, it's not much love. So it's like applying that, not just to people, but to things. Like I've been wondering who brought these candles. I don't know. Very beautiful. Somebody probably brought them from some country, but just recognizing every little bit of effort and acknowledging that fills us with this sense of love and appreciation. And, you know, I feel to love someone, it's the challenge for me is when I can't understand someone. So if I can try to understand someone, there's a much better chance of my loving them. But sometimes I can't get close because I have a barrier. They can't open themselves up to me so that I can understand them. You know, sometimes people feel they can't talk to you. So one thing about love, I think the most important effort is to remove any barriers that are in the way of love. So it could be my attitude so that people can't trust me to kind of expose themselves a bit so that I can understand them. You know, but I think what Baba was saying recently, which, you know, we probably find a little bit difficult, if somebody's being very angry or, you know, not being very pleasant with us, to take it as love. And then Baba was also saying that mercy, to give teachings with mercy. So, you know, if there's not love, if there's not understanding, which sometimes we haven't got to that point with someone, at least we can have mercy. Because, as Baba was saying, that person is under the influence of their sanskars at that time. And nobody likes to be under influence. None of us enjoy it when we're under any influence of anger or ego or attachment or whatever. We don't enjoy it. We feel like a slave when we're under influence. So if somebody is behaving in a very negative way towards me, to see that they are under some influence, so Baba says to have mercy and forgiveness. And that's the way to, you know, clear this blockage. So the effort, to make any effort that will, you know, clear these blockages, to remove any barriers that are standing in the way of love. And another thing about love is that, you know, as I was saying, love often happens when we don't feel love. Because love is not a feeling. Love is a verb. It's something we do. You know? Like Baba says, the proof of love is to become equal to Baba. When I heard that, I thought, yeah, you know, it's so easy to say I love Baba. But it's so superficial. It's like so, you know, empty of significance. Unless I can become equal to Baba, that's really true love. So the proof of love, Baba says, is to become equal. And we need to be very powerful to become equal. So, you know, we really have to make that connection, strengthen that connection with Baba so that we can become equal. Because as Dadiji once said, only a powerful soul can love. Often we want to love, but we're just not able to. We just don't have that, you know, real spiritual strength to be able to love a soul. So in that sense too, love is effortful. Love is an effort. It doesn't necessarily, like I said, if you go for a walk with someone that you don't particularly feel easy with, it's effortful, it's extending myself. Love is not for lazy people. You know, you can't be loving if you're lazy. You can fall in love if you're lazy. It doesn't take any effort to fall in love, but to love, you know, to really love, to put in that effort to make the relationship work. Love is effortful. And, you know, what Didi Nirmala was saying the other day was very beautiful. Her love is to accept. It was very nice what she was saying, and it's very true that she accepts us at our level, what we can do, and, you know, encourages us to do service and, you know, do our best from there. But her, you know, because, you know, she was saying, I think, that she doesn't come from the heart that much. She's not a expressive loving like that, you know. But her love is like acceptance. You know, it's a very deep love, the love of acceptance. And, you know, that's a very beautiful quality. And then another aspect of love is that love, well, one definition is that love is giving. You know, it's a state of giving. But I would say it's even beyond that. It's a state of being. Because I think if we talk about or think about giving, it's very complicated. We start to calculate. You know, whenever we think of giving, because of this scarcity mentality, I think, it's complicated. We think who's worthy of giving. You know, who can we give to? Because we feel, well, we don't have that much love, so should I love this one or that one? And we used to discuss this question often. Can we love everyone equally? Is it possible to love everyone equally? What do you think? Theoretically, it sounds like, you know, it's really what we should do. But practically, is it possible to love everyone equally? We did it in the golden age, so we can do it now. What else do you have to say about that? Can we love everyone equally? Not before Gyan. So we used to often discuss this, and, you know, after working on, like, you know, I see, you know, this path as a study, really as a university. And love was like a topic I took up for myself for about 10 years or so. I think I haven't left that topic yet, but I thought about love, I think, for at least 10 years. And people knew I was interested in the topic, so they'd give me poems or writings, or I'd ask people, you know, what is love to you? And, you know, really researched it. But after about 10 years of researching love, I remember one time sitting in meditation, and the experience was, the thought that came, not from me, just from Barbara or something, the thought was, I don't love anyone, and no one is to love me. And I thought, that's a funny thought to have after 10 years of researching love. But it felt really very pure. It felt really very pure to have that feeling. And so then I went into, what does this mean? You know, it's come in my mind and it feels very pure, but what does it mean? And, you know, as I went into it, I felt that what it means is that I'm Bubba's. So I'm not to attract anyone. You know, sometimes there's if you've got a husband, you shouldn't attract anyone to you. It's very impure. It's very disloyal, something like that. So if I'm Bubba's, I shouldn't seek, you know, other people's attention, love, attract people to me, because it's very impure. So the feeling was, you know, that I'm Bubba's, so no one should be attracted to me. And then the second part, that's the part of no one should love me. But the other part is, you know, I don't love anyone, was that Yeah, I don't. I'm just love. I just should be love. And if people feel that love, they feel it. If they don't, they don't. But my effort is to be love. And I think that's the answer to it. If I can be love, then it's not a matter of loving anyone equally. It's not a matter of giving love. It's a matter of just being love, like a flower. It doesn't think who it'll give the fragrance to. It's just fragrant. So when there's that state of being, then actually a lot of the complications of love go away. You know, because one time I had this topic, the courage to love. And I even gave the topic, I thought, because it takes a lot of courage to love. But then I thought, even to think like that is to go in a track that's going to get you in trouble. But just to be love. Because otherwise I think what happens whenever we give love is there's expectation. I think it's very difficult to give love and not have any expectations. But just to be love, it's no calculation, no expectation, and in fact, not really even effort, because you're not doing anything, you're just being. So it's like getting to that seed stage, that I am stage. And actually nature's like that. Nature's just in a state of giving. It doesn't think who to give to, where to give, when not to give. And our nature, I am love. I am love. The soul is love. So just that state of being. Just to give you another thought to think about. And that is, when I was in Vietnam, I said to this Buddhist, we often have these little discussions, and I said to him, I think Buddhists have compassion, but I don't think they talk much about love. So think about that, the difference between love and compassion, are they the same? So what do you think? Love and compassion, are they the same? In fact, I gave a talk after saying this to the person. I'd never thought about it before I made that comment to him. But after saying this to him, I was to go and give a talk on true love to a group of social workers, people studying social work. And I gave a talk something like this. And a woman halfway through the talk came up and challenged me. She stood in front of me and she said, this is compassion you're talking about and not love. So I thought it was interesting. Immediately, this question was put back to me. So I thought, that's worth thinking about. Do Brahmins have love or compassion or both? And I came to Madhavan and I asked many Brahmins, I said, do Brahmins have love or compassion or both? And many Brahmins said, Brahmins have love but no compassion. Many said, Brahmins have compassion but no love. So, what do you think? And are they the same? Is there going to be question answers? Maybe we can start using the mic now. Brother, can we have the mic? Oh, she's saying, if I give a definition of compassion, then we'll be able to see the difference. Well, to me, I would feel that compassion, I mean, after talking about it to people, it seems that compassion is more out of a need. You know, we serve because there's a need. So someone with compassion kind of gives out of need. But love is like just, you know, like I give the example, like I thought for myself, my own thing was, I think I have more compassion than love because I always think of service. So I always think of, you know, doing something where there's a need. But like as far as like, you know, making tea for everyone or little acts of love, you know, those kind of sweet little nice things that, you know, people don't really need, but they're nice. I don't do that much of those things. You know, I always think to use my time for need. You know, whereas other people do those lovely little things on a regular basis, you know. So, but what I was thinking anyway, if there's anyone comes forward, you can come forward. But what I was thinking about it, you can come to the mic. What I was thinking about it is that thinking about it, I feel that BKs have both, because I think we do serve out of, you know, we do give love in a sense of service. Like people come to our places, we serve them. And I think we try to fulfill their need, but I feel that Brahmins go a step extra, you know, by giving blessings and toli and making things more special than we have to. You know, like Madhuban's full of love, not just compassion. Right? What do you feel? I think it's full of love. What do you have to say?
I just wanted to say that I think that compassion is a lot like mercy.
Yeah.
And also, I've often wondered, what is the difference between love and happiness? Like, if you're living your life in happiness, when you were talking about nature, and nature just exuding love, like, isn't living a happy life, every day being happy, is that not the same thing as love?
Well, I think all those virtues go together. Because I think none of us could say that we're 100% loving without also being 100% happy, peaceful, powerful. You know, they seem to all go together. You know, but the quality of love is different to happiness, to peace there. But definitely they're very interconnected. Like, I don't think you can be happy without being loving or loving without being happy.
I have a question. It's just that in the past I remember running like women's groups and things, and you come across a bit where it gets a bit tricky when people are in a situation which is codependent, or, you know, someone's actually been abused, and you can actually use these ideas to keep yourself in a situation that's not healthy. Like, you know, sometimes people are being abused or whatever, and you tell them about being forgiving and loving and things.
Mm.
And actually sometimes the most loving thing to do is to actually step back.
Right.
And like, I found that a bit challenging to answer, you know, dealing with those people in that situation. And I'm just wondering if you had anything to say about this.
Yeah, well, actually Jagdish Bhai gave one of the best classes I've ever heard on love. He was supposed to give 10 points on keeping a balance. But after 1.5 hours, he still hadn't gone past the balance of love and law. And then we had another hour with him still on the balance of love and law. And one beautiful thing he said is the balance of love and law is not that you sometimes have love, sometimes have law, but you always love according to the law. So that's an interesting topic. What are the laws of love? And I think brings, you know, this question that you have. I think there are definitely boundaries, you know, that we need to keep in our relationships. And they are like the keeping within the laws of love. Because love is to extend yourself for your own or another's spiritual growth. So if someone's being very dependent, then they're not growing and you're not growing either. So if you apply this kind of understanding, it would mean that, you know, you'd really have to break that dependency to let love flourish and grow. Otherwise, it's not growth when there's that dependency. But there's a very good analogy or story about these boundaries, just to kind of give it make it a bit clearer. There was a couple who went to a psychologist, and they, you know, they went with their 20-year-old son, and they said to the psychologist, you know, our son has a problem. He doesn't work. He's not studying anymore. He doesn't clean his room. He doesn't help around the house. He's not earning any money. And the psychologist said to the parents, well, where does he live? Oh, he lives with us. Who feeds him? We do. Where does the money come from to feed him? Well, of course, we pay for it, you know? And who cleans a house? Well, we do. So the psychologist said to the parents, I don't think your son's got any problem. Right? He's got everything. He's got a food, shelter, clean house, everything, you know? So it kind of demonstrates that the problem is with the parents because they are kind of enabling him to be in that state, you know? So sometimes we really have to have boundaries where we don't enable people to have weaknesses. It's like if somebody's got a habit of stealing, then it's not helpful for me to leave valuable things around because that just doesn't help that person. Or if somebody, like one person came to me and she said, my husband says that I don't have unconditional love because I won't accept his girlfriend. You know? And I said, but, you know, that's kind of enabling his weakness, you know? Like if somebody's stealing, like lust is another weakness, just like stealing is a weakness. So, you know, if you're allowing that, I don't think you're helping him. So if you love him, you won't allow that. But, you know, people get confused. She said, don't I have love for him if I'm not allowing him to have his girlfriend? So there's laws around love. And I think it's a big topic in itself. What are the laws of love? But like they say, there's no such thing as the vices. They're just perverted virtues. So anything that's, you know, when love is perverted, when it's corrupted, then it becomes a vice. So then it's gone out of the laws. And that's why, you know, this thing that Baba teaches us of being loving and detached, this balance, then we stay within the laws of love. Otherwise, especially things like mercy and compassion, they very easily go over into, you know, dependency, attachment, don't they? I think we all have our experiences of that. So any other questions or comments that you have?
The business of sympathy and empathy. I always thought it was good as a nurse and in helping people terminally ill, sort of to empathize. Does this not come into this at all? Are we not to empathize with people?
Oh, definitely.
And share their...
Definitely. Why do you feel I'm not saying that empathy is good?
Well, I'm
why is this question coming up?
I'm thinking in my mind that it's the detachment. You're saying to be detached and our growth. And to empathize with somebody is the sort of blending in with their pain and sharing it.
Well, I think generally what people say is the difference is in empathy is that you don't blend into their pain. You actually stay detached and loving, like a nurse. If a nurse got involved in the people's suffering, she wouldn't last long. So we have to be, you know, and in fact, just to kind of maybe share how I see loving and detached, that love is allowing and attached is controlling. So if we're detached, we're allowing. If we're attached, we're controlling. So as much as we can, you know, because even when people are sick, we can't change the situation. We have to allow. So allowing, yeah. Not controlling the situation.
So it was sort of comfort with the empathy.
Empathy, yeah. Because often I know for many of us, when people have that kind of empathy where they get involved with us, we actually don't like it because it's kind of like feeling sorry for us, and we don't want people to feel sorry for us. Cooperation, Baba says, that especially for Brahmins, we should give cooperation, you know, not even help so much, more cooperation. Yeah, so it's kind of, and there's a very beautiful saying that I picked up from one of the Dutch sisters. She said that angels don't worry about anyone. they believe in them. Isn't it beautiful? Angels don't worry about anyone. They believe in them. So like if we worry about someone, it's like saying we don't believe in that person's abilities to rise to the occasion if we worry about them. But when we believe in someone, we empower them. And that's like what I think Baba's talking about, good wishes. Good wishes aren't worry about somebody. They're empowering thoughts. You know, what do you feel when you're in trouble? You don't want people's pity and worry, but it's very nice to have good wishes and, you know, just to feel that people care. But it's an empowering feeling. And in fact, if we go to the level of like worrying or, you know, being too concerned with people, then, you know, we lose our power. And I've experienced if I go to that level, I can't help the other person. I can feel for them, but I can't help them because I'm not in a powerful state. So keeping ourselves detached actually helps us to be loving. They go together. They're not opposites.
Oh, I'd just like to ask a little bit about fear. It's been 1 year now where I was going to work in the morning and was brutally stabbed 10 times, and that's why I'm handicapped now. But however, when you're speaking about that transcendent form or way of being, I had absolutely no fear at all.
Yeah.
At that time, the only thing I knew was I had to live because I have work to do on the earth. And there was absolutely no fear. However, when I came out of surgery, flashbacks, and as soon as I would fall asleep, nightmares, all these knives and swords were in the eyes, and so I couldn't, all the darkness, I couldn't be alone in dark for almost a year. Now, in August, I spent a whole month totally by myself while Lokiks went to Germany. But anyway, overcoming, it was severe phobias. Sometimes I would call, living in Alaska, with Lokik family, very comforting, but sometimes I would call like Oregon, Karen Ben or others, what do I do? I'm in this house alone, it's dark, I'm absolutely petrified. And now, I'm not that way now, but I have a tinge. You know, is someone hiding behind that car? You know, and there's a tinge of that there. I suppose I just have to change the thought immediately, I suppose. I just still have tinges, and that's, to me, I've come a million miles from where I was, but that's the thing, is from severe phobia, someone's coming right now and they're going to kill me and I'm going to die and I can see blood and all that gore, to now just having a tinge, but what can I do to absolutely overcome that so I can walk in freedom?
I mean, I must say that I don't feel fully qualified to answer that because, you know, I've done this kind of topic from fear to love as a weekend retreat, and I usually get someone else to do it with me who's had real fear, because personally I haven't had a situation like that. So I haven't conquered fear like you have. You're probably a better teacher than me in that, because you've already gone from intense phobia to a little twinge. But still the power of knowledge, I guess, works, because you know, I was in China once talking to someone from Shanghai, and she said, why did I have to suffer so much? She went through, you know, really terrible, terrible experiences. And I felt so inadequate sharing with her my, you know, some points of knowledge, because I've never suffered. And while I was speaking, I felt like a bit fake because I haven't been through it. But she still said that more than 60% of her sorrow disappeared just with those points of knowledge. So I'm just saying that because often you probably find yourself in this situation that somebody asks you something and you don't really have that experience. So you feel, you know, it's like, am I qualified to say anything? But I think just, you know, what comes to my mind is that's why Baba says we really have to have yoga. Because I would say the only way to finish, you know, the seed of things is by that yoga and seed stage, not just ordinary, because it overwrites those experiences. You know, like I was saying before, really only experiencing Baba's unconditional love, I've seen it's just transformed people so much, like unbelievably. Like this brother who was coming to our center that had AIDS and he had so many, you know, malfunction of the liver and multiple lung abscesses and all these complications. And he hated his father. You know, he hated him since he was young because his father was abusive and so many things. But he experienced in meditation Baba's unconditional love. And he said after that, he could not hate his father anymore. You know, he was 40 years old. He'd hated him his whole life and he could not hate him, you know? And all of his symptoms disappeared after that. You know, so I think Baba's unconditional love, or, you know, that depth of yoga, you know, not just meditation, not just thinking about things, but real yoga where we connect with Baba and get healed at the cellular level, you know, really right at that level. But if anyone else has any yuktis to overcome fear, you're welcome to share it. We've just got 1 minute, I think. Is this a question or in response to that? Ah, okay. I think you've got a response to this comment.
No sé si alguien va a poder traducir porque yo hablo el español. ¿Tú traduces? Bueno, quería preguntar sobre el miedo, el pánico que yo experimenté. Siempre fui una persona muy, muy expuesta y quizás me vanagloriaba decir que no tenía miedo a nada. Le decía a mis hijos, no hay que tener miedo a nada, no existe el miedo, es un estado, pero no hay que tener miedo. No obstante, hace 5 años yo manejaba muy bien y con mucha decisión, yo trabajaba muy lejos del lugar donde yo vivía.
She was saying that before she used to tell her family that you can't have fear of anything, that fear is a state of mind, and then 5 years ago she was driving around and something happened.
No obstante, en una oportunidad estaba manejando de mi trabajo a mi casa que queda a 100 kilómetros de distancia.
So she was driving and she had like un accidente, tuviste un accidente? Okay. She was driving a couple of kilometers from her house.
Y me vino un estado de miedo, de pánico eminente, como de muerte eminente, quedé petrificada, transpiraba, temblaba y no podía seguir manejando.
So then, all of a sudden she had this panic attack where she was like perspiring and just had an incredible fear and didn't know why it was happening.
Yo no estaba en este conocimiento, pero tenía mucha fe, era cristiana, entonces dije, no, voy a sobreponer. Esa noche me tuvieron que acompañar, pero al día siguiente salí con el auto y dije, voy a superar este miedo. Y salí, pero cuando tenía que cruzar un puente no podía, entonces pedí a alguien que me cruzara el auto y después seguía manejando.
So she said to herself that she's going to conquer this fear. And even going across a bridge, she actually had to, you know, use the power of the mind. But that was before she was in Gyan, no? Estás antes de conocimiento, no? She had a lot of faith, she had faith in Christ.
No obstante, ahora, estando ya en el conocimiento, vendí el auto, porque dije, no quiero manejar porque tengo miedo de cometer un siniestro que pueda afectar a otra persona, porque el miedo estaba instalado y, bueno, no sé si ahora me animaría a tomar el auto para manejar en lugares, espacios muy abiertos, porque en la ciudad no tenía miedo. Thank you.
Entonces, she was saying that she actually sold the car because she still had that fear that, you know, she was going. But actually, I have an answer for that, in a way. I had an experience once in the Colombian jungle with these FARC guerrillas, where they trapped us and pointed a bunch of machine guns at us. And I always thought that I never had any fear also, but at that moment I felt a tremendous amount of fear. And what I saw was that we can't let fear control our lives, because if we have fear, it's like if you're on a horse and you have fear, the horse is going to buck. And at that moment, I just became very soul conscious and started giving love. And in that experience of giving love, I made friends with these guys and transformed the situation, and just a lot of powerful drishti, because in my mind, what I told them is that I do not accept this. I will not let them kidnap me, and I will not let them kill me. But it was a powerful experience of giving them love and becoming friends with them and changing the situation. And after an hour, they let us go, and it was very powerful. Another thing that I've been doing lately in some of the healing we've been working is that we do have experiences on a cellular level. So in her case, her fear is probably from a past life or something where she was in a car accident over a bridge. That's why she can't cross that bridge. In your case, you saw someone stab you and create damage to your body. And what I've learned is sometimes we have to have controlled amnesia, where it's actually doing like a mental brainwashing, where you eliminate, like you said, go into the seed stage and burn that memory, because it's on a cellular level. And one of the tricks that I use, or yuktis, is breathing. So you just breathe and you create like a vortex in your chest, and you just blow all that energy of fear out, because what happens when we first have fear? We stop breathing. And every time you remember a memory of an experience that was very painful, that memory comes back. So it's like a video in our subconscious. So you actually have to move that energy out of your body and completely out of your system. So if you would hit your head one day and lose your memory, that memory is not there anymore. So it's gone. So what Baba's knowledge does is gives us the power to go into that seed stage, burn everything, and then just let it go. And once you let it go, you can't bring it back. So like Baba says, you drop it into the bottom of the ocean, you have to drop it to the bottom of the ocean, not to the top of the ocean, because then it'll always pop back up. So just a yukti to control fear. But as Brahmins, if we're angels and we have God on our side, why should we fear? Right? Don't we have God with us? You have 100,000 angels around you. So you have in bhakti that, you know, these people that can do miracles, can't we do miracles? So we can conquer fear.
So maybe time for just one last question.
Can you please tell shortly how to achieve the state of being love? How to achieve that state?
I think the only way is, well, I think it's those things, you know, like I think we can increase our love by being inclusive, by allowing, you know, all the things that were mentioned. We can increase our love through those things in a very practical way. But I think ultimately to really become such a being of love, it's through yoga and it's through experiencing Baba's unconditional love. And I've experienced that when, you know, when we have real yoga, it's like Baba can, you know, really rearrange our head, you know, from other feelings to love, you know. Like all kinds of work Baba does if we allow him. And I think that's what Baba often says, that we should use him more. You know, we really should use Baba. But just one thing that I've done practically is just going, well, again, this topic could go on and on, but experiencing all the different relationships of love with Baba, like as a mother, a father, because there's a different quality of love for a brother, a different quality of love for a child, for a mother, for a teacher. So I think we can understand all the facets of love by experiencing all the different relationships with Baba. You know, but of course we can talk a lot more about this topic. It's a big topic. So, just to start, I think. I don't know. Maybe with someone else even, because it's a very good topic. You know, just this question, how to increase our capacity to love. So that's a very good topic. Okay, Om Shanti.